This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Before we turn to the subjects at hand, I got so many letters yesterday asking about my lip. People are so concerned about me. My dermatologist found some precancerous cells on my lip, so gave me a medicine that causes blistering and red, and that's supposed to kill the cells. So here I am with my red blistered lip. Probably will be better in the next couple of days. But I appreciate very much your concerns. An announcement. My newest book, I just got a copy of it in the mail. It's called War on Woke, Why the New McCarthyism is More Dangerous than the Old. This is my 55th book. But that's not the important thing. This is my fourth book in 1 year. In 1 year, I've written War on Woke, War Against the Jews, Dershowitz on Killing, How the Law Decides Who Shall Live and Who Shall Die, and Get Trump. And I just finished my next book. It hasn't published, hasn't been published yet, but it's a serious kind of scholarly book, and it's called The Preventive State, The Challenge of Predicting and Preventing Cataclysmic Harms Without Granting Too Much Power to Government. So I have a draft, and I'm working on it, and it'll probably be published in the next few months. As I've said before, if I were 25 years old instead of 85 years old, I'd probably be in Gaza fighting for Israel, for American values, for Judeo-Christian values, and against the horrors of Hamas. But I'm 85, so all I can do is write and do this podcast and appear occasionally on some talk shows and television shows. And I hope to be able to continue that for a long time. Before we get to my favorite district attorney, Fani Willis, I want to talk about my former student, Jamie Raskin, congressman from Maryland, was in my first year criminal law class. I represented his father like 30 years or 40 years earlier. His father was a socialist who was indicted along with Dr. Benjamin Spock for anti-war activities. We won the case and got his father acquitted. I was a young, consultant in the case, but was part of the defense team. And Jamie was my student. I got to know him quite well. I don't think he was much influenced by me. He was much more influenced by Professor Lawrence Tribe. And now he's come up with this cockamamie, dangerous banana republic idea. He announced today that he was very upset at the Supreme Court decision, not as upset as Keith Olbermann, who talked about dissolving the Supreme Court, not quite in that league. But basically, he said, look, here's the plan. The Supreme Court has said Congress can pass a statute under Article 5 of the 14th Amendment, which would create procedures for disallowing an insurrectionist to serve. So here's what we do. Let's assume that Trump gets elected president, even by an overwhelming majority in November. We're not going to let him serve, because the 14th Amendment doesn't talk about running. It talks about serving. So we're going to stop him from serving. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to hope that the Senate and the House both become Democrat. If that happens, they get sworn in on January 1st, 2025, the president, Trump, doesn't get sworn in until January 20th. That gives us 19 days to create a banana republic and to deny the American public the right to have a president they voted for. Here's what we can do. We can pass a statute. We can, and the sitting president, who would be a lame duck, but the sitting president, Biden, wouldn't veto it. And he would sign it, and it would become law. And it would say that if Congress decides that the man elected president is an insurrectionist, he is disqualified. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to pass a statute between the 1st of January and the 20th of January. We're going to get President Biden to sign it on the 19th of January. And then we're going to stop President Trump from serving in office. That's the plan. Nothing could go wrong with that, right? The American public would simply sit back and accept that, right? No, it wouldn't be acceptable to the American public, and it would earn us the 11th banana on a scale of 10 bananas, creating a banana republic. By the way, as a result of yesterday's decision, I took one banana off. I was up to six, but after the Supreme Court, 9-0, said you can't take President Trump's name off the ballot, I took a banana down. With J.B. Raskin, I may be inclined to put it up. Let's see how many more congressmen. He says he has the support of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's a decent congresswoman from Florida, down here where I am, and perhaps other Democrats. If a lot of Democrats support this cockamamie idea, you're getting a couple of more bananas. It's just outrageous how a congressman can expect to take away the franchise. And he says he's doing it in the name of democracy. He's doing it to promote democracy, taking away the votes of millions of Americans who overwhelmingly elect a president, taking those votes away, denying him the right to serve as president, denying the people who voted for him the right to have their president. That's in the name of democracy. You know, Stalin also said he was doing it for democracy, and many dictators have said they're doing it in the name of democracy. And I don't care if you're a left-wing dictator or a right-wing dictator, if you deny people the right to vote, if you deny people the right to have a president who was voted for overwhelmingly, now I'm not going to vote for him at the moment. You never know. Things might change if Bernie Sanders gets the Democratic nomination. I'm not certainly not voting for him or any other hard leftist, but assuming that the vast majority of Americans elect Donald Trump, the idea that Jamie Raskin and Debbie Wasserman Schultz get to tell the Americans they can't have the president they want is just beyond belief. And what are law schools teaching their students? I don't take any blame for Jamie Raskin. And he was not my protege. He was Larry Tribe's protege. That doesn't surprise me. Tribe attacked the Supreme Court quite viciously yesterday, even attacked it before they decided, because after he saw the oral argument, he realized the writing was on the wall. He had previously predicted that it was a pretty simple case. And of course, the Supreme Court would uphold the lower court decision in Colorado, because the lower court decision in Judge Luttig's erroneous words was a slam. And it's just such a solid decision. Nobody could disagree with it, except all 9 justices of the Supreme Court. What have we come to? What have we come to? And where are we going? So a good prelude to Fani Willis. Now, Fani Willis has a new problem. There is an assistant district attorney from Cobb County who apparently has no stake in any of this thing, a woman named Yeager. She says, and here I'll quote to you from the article, Yeager further contends that she was present in Bradley's office in September 2023. That's 3 months before the challenge officially was made to the relationship, etc. But she knew it was in the air, and everybody, a lot of people in Georgia knew it was in the air, and that the motion was about to be made. I think the lawyers were already working on it and talking to people. And according to this news report, Yeager further contends she was present in Bradley's office in September 2023 when he received a call from Willis. That is, he, Bradley, the witness, received a call from Willis. Remember, Bradley said he never spoke to anybody about the case, that he received a call from Willis. Yeager overheard Willis telling Bradley, and this is a quote, They are coming after us. Okay. What does that mean? Obviously, it seems to refer to the lawyers in the case. They're coming after us, the lawyers in the case. You don't need to talk to them about anything about us. You don't need to talk to them. Now, you can interpret that in very many ways, but I think one plausible interpretation is if you get subpoenaed, you don't have to talk to them. Now, if that's what she said, that's witness tampering. That's obstruction of justice. That is a very serious felony. Now, she'll either deny she said it, but if she has to admit it, she probably will try to spin it and say, no, I didn't mean them. I didn't mean the lawyers or a court proceeding. I meant the journalists, but the journalists weren't really calling them. It was the lawyers who were preparing the case at that point. And so we have at least enough to investigate Willis for obstruction of justice and for witness tampering, also for perjury, because Yeager also claims that Bradley told her that he had personal knowledge of their relationship, including details about the use of Robin Yerty's apartment and other meetings before November 2021. Bradley also reportedly asserted that Wade prepared his own divorce complaint and instructed Bradley to sign and file them. So she seems, again, you never know about a witness, the credibility, how they'll stand up to cross-examination, but there's certainly enough there to reopen the case. And I would hope that maybe it would be reopened. Maybe the judge in the case will hear new testimony. I heard, but I haven't been able to confirm it, that maybe the judge is going to hear some argument on this tomorrow. I've been asked to stand by to comment on it on Newsmax, but I haven't myself heard or read that there's going to be a hearing, or whether the judge has or will or may decide whether to call this witness. Look, these allegations are not going away. Even if the judge were to foolishly and wrongly decide, nothing to see here, we'll let the case proceed, no disqualification, no conflict of interest, no appearance of conflict of interest, no appearance of an injustice, I'm letting it go forward. This case is not going away. There are going to be more witnesses. There's going to be more disclosure. There's going to be more embarrassment. And if this judge is smart, he doesn't slam the door on that, because the world is watching him. And the world is watched and saw these witnesses. And everybody I've spoken to, liberal, conservative, pro-Trump, anti-Trump, everybody I've spoken to came away doubting the truthfulness of the testimony of the three key witnesses. That is, Fawnie Willis herself, the boyfriend, and the friend of the boyfriend. And on a record like that, in a case of this significance, you just can't leave it that way. You just can't leave it in a state of such uncertainty. If the judge is smart, and he seems to be smart, and if he's honest, and I hope he's honest, I think he's honest, he did apparently make a small contribution to the Fannie Willis campaign. At least that's what I've read. I haven't seen firsthand information about that. He will make this case go away by making a finding that there is an appearance of impropriety. And by the way, he can do that without taking the new witnesses. If he was to make a finding that you need an actual conflict, then I think he would have to call these witnesses. You can't do that on an incomplete record. But if he does conclude that they have to be disqualified in any event, then he can probably spare them the embarrassment and possible legal liability, criminal liability, of having a new witness called who would contradict their sworn testimony as to when the affair began. Look, as I've said before, I have a lot of experience in this business. I have cross-examined a lot of truthful people. I made my reputation early on in my career by a famous cross-examination of a policeman who I got to admit enough information to throw out the murder conviction of five people. You can read about it in my first of my books, The Best Defense, and it's the first chapter called the JDL case. And it has the actual cross-examination in it, how I really, I don't know if I want to say tricked or fooled or led a policeman who I knew was lying, essentially, to acknowledge it and win the case for us. So, you know, I have a lot of experience with people telling the truth and people lying. And I have to tell you, as I said before, if I had to make a decision to call Fannie Willis or Nathan Wade or the friend as witnesses, and remember the ethics rules preclude you from calling a witness on your own behalf or on your client's behalf who you believe is not telling the truth. I couldn't call the three of them. I could not put them on the stand. My personal subjective, not saying objective, my personal opinion, my personal view is that they did not tell the truth about when the affair began, the course of payments and payments back. I just don't believe it. And I think a lot of people out there just don't believe it. And so the ball is now quite squarely in the hands of the judge. The judge heard closing argument, and he probably has the power under the statute to say the evidence is closed, but he also clearly has the power to reopen the evidence. That's what he should do. I have no doubt that that's what he should do. He should reopen the hearing. He should call this person, a Jaeger, and put that person under oath and allow her to tell her story and see whether it affects his credibility determinations. He should not be making credibility determinations without hearing all the evidence. And, you know, this is not evidence that somehow one side or the other withheld. Well, certainly the defendants didn't withheld it. They just came upon it. Maybe the prosecution knew about it. Maybe Willis knew about it. We that's one of the issues that would probably come up on cross-examination. And probably you'd have to recall Willis as well, because Willis would have to be confronted with her statements that she didn't speak to anybody and the other people's statements that they didn't speak to anybody. This is a woman who's prepared, a witness who's prepared to testify. I overheard a conversation between the two people in which Willis said, you just don't have to talk to these people. You know, there are people in jail today for having said that to witnesses. Can you imagine if there were a case where there was a recording or a witness that said that Donald Trump said to witness A, B, and C, you know, you don't have to testify. They're coming to get us. They're out to get us. You don't have to testify. That's an obstruction of justice. Now, saying you don't have to speak to the press, maybe not. It's not an obstruction of justice. But when the statement is you don't have to speak to anybody, they are coming after us. You don't need to speak to them about anything about us. Ambiguous enough for a hearing, ambiguous enough for an investigation. As I've said before, I think the Attorney General of Georgia, whoever has the authority to do it in Georgia, should appoint a special prosecutor to investigate whether or not Fannie Willis and her two witnesses committed perjury. I think there's enough evidence to conduct such an investigation. I would like to see the results of the investigation before I opine on whether I think there's enough to go to a grand jury. Remember, to go to a grand jury, all you need is probable cause. What does that mean? More probable than not. In my view, it's more probable than not that they committed perjury. In my view, I don't have enough to conclude whether they committed an obstruction of justice or witness tampering, but I'd like to hear from all the parties about that. And I would think that, you know, maybe one of the three witnesses might flip and say, look, enough's enough. I don't want to go to jail for Phony Willis. Let me tell you what really happened. Give me immunity and let's put Phony Willis in jail. I'm sure she's done that in her career as a prosecutor. And there's no reason why what she has done to others cannot be done to her. So, you know, some of my letters have suggested I'm a little obsessed with the Phony Willis case. Well, maybe I am. I cannot stand prosecutors who don't obey the law. Who will guard the guardians? Who will prosecute the prosecutors? That's the key question in a democracy. Prosecutors, to paraphrase what the anti-Trump people have been saying for years, prosecutors are not above the law. Interestingly enough, prosecutors do have immunity from certain things. And that issue will come up when the Supreme Court hears argument on whether or not President Trump has immunity from things he may have done while acting as president back in his term. So complicated, interesting. We live in interesting times. God, I wish I were back teaching some of this stuff because it's so, so relevant to constitutional law and to criminal law. And so much is going on that. And when I used to teach, I would always teach at least one course, one seminar, based on what was going on during the Clinton impeachment. I had a seminar on the impeachment clause. I've had other seminars about relevant events. It started during the Vietnam War when I was a kid lawyer, a kid professor. I taught the first course in the country. We had 400 students, not credit. They would come every once a week for a semester, and I would lecture and bring in guests about the legality of the Vietnam War. So I've always thought it's very important to teach about relevant material, which is why I love this talk show, this podcast, because I get to talk about relevant information as a lawyer. And I know from your letters that some of you appreciate that. Okay. First question is relevant to this. How many bananas do we have on the Banana Republic scale? As I said, I had six, took one down. They put it back up, depending on the situation. Okay. This is a good one. Do the Supreme Court justices have immunity for their decisions while on the court? Yes, not only for their decisions. They have immunity from defamation. They have immunity from perjury. They have immunity from virtually everything. Now, justices don't hit each other on the head with canes the way senators used to do. You remember the Sumner case where a senator from South Carolina, I think, hit another senator and almost killed him. And there was a question of whether senatorial immunity applies to that as well. But yes, justices have immunity. Magistrates have immunity. The lowest level judges have immunity. But does the president of the United States have immunity? Not according to the D.C. Circuit. No immunity whatsoever. The Supreme Court said, we want to hear argument only on the issue of whether the president has immunity for acts done within his presidential authority. And we're going to hear that argument. Hopefully we'll hear it live. We won't see it foolishly, but maybe we'll hear it live toward the end of April. We'll see. I had mentioned that one of the worst decisions in my memory, in my experience, was the decision confining 110,000 Americans of Japanese descent to camps in the middle of the country to avoid them being on the West Coast for fear that they would commit espionage or sabotage. In fact, in my new book, The Preventive State, I have a whole chapter on that because that was such an abusive attempt to try to prevent something that never would have happened. There were no instances of sabotage or espionage by Japanese Americans. Of course, they were in the center. So, you know, critics of my view would say, well, they didn't have a chance to do it. But there were others who were out. Remember, mostly it applied only to the West Coast. It didn't apply to the East Coast. Okay, so here's some letters about that. The Japanese internments went further than that. Their businesses and properties were seized, and by the time they were released, they had nothing to return to. Terrible decision is correct. Yet their regiment, the 442 in the European theater, won more medals of honor than any other regiment. That's really interesting. And of course, that's right. And as a young lawyer, I worked with Justice Arthur Goldberg, then former justice, on a law that gave reparations to people who were detained in these camps. They were minimal, you know, I think $25,000, but they were symbolic, and that was important. But we have different views on this. So here's another letter. Years ago, I had a coworker of Japanese descent who was a child in these internment camps and told me that he was treated well and that his family felt protected by the army. He might have become a victim of violence had he not been protected in the camps. I've heard that also. If so, it should have been voluntary. It shouldn't have been compelled. And it should have been done with compensation, because what happened is a lot of Japanese Americans on the West Coast were truck farmers. And what happened is when the detention orders were issued, they had to sell their truck farms, and they sold them for a dime on the dollar because they had to sell them immediately. So the damage was very considerable. And it doesn't say much about Americans to say that they needed to be protected against violence. Would Americans really have attacked children, Japanese people, just because they were of the same race, not even race, ethnicity, as the people who had bombed Pearl Harbor? Probably some would have. And, you know, the question is, should there have been police protection? Well, it's something interesting. J. Edgar Hoover was not in favor of this plan. He said, look, I have the ability to figure out who's going to commit espionage, who's going to commit sabotage. You don't have to detain them all. Just give me the power to arrest anybody I think might commit espionage or sabotage. And the liberals in the Justice Department, headed by future Justice Clark, who I clerked with, I was on the law clerk when he was a justice. I clerked for a different one, but I knew him. And he said, no, it'd be better to keep families together. And there was an argument for that, because in Hawaii, General Richardson, who was in charge, he declared martial law on the whole island, because Hawaii was obviously on the way to Japan, on the way from Japan to the United States. And so under his martial law, he confined many, many adults, just male men who were adults, kept the women and the children more vulnerable, because the men were put in the camps and the women and the children were not. And there were some within the Japanese American community who preferred, they didn't like any of it, but preferred the detention where the families were together and where birth rates continued to be, you know, stable and decent over, you know, it was a 4-year period that they were detained. And that's a long period of time. Of course, during that same period of time, 6 million Jews were put in camps, not for purposes of protecting them, but for purposes of murdering them. So that's why I don't like to use the word concentration camps, although literally they were. They concentrated them in camps in Arizona and places like Tule, Arizona and places like that. But it's a mixed picture, but it's a sad day in our history when people could be confined against their will. And remember the case that comes up, Korematsu and Hirabayashi and all of those cases, were people who didn't want to be detained, didn't want to be protected. And the government should not ever protect people who don't want to be protected, even if they think that they have to be protected. So it was a terrible series of cases. Okay. This is one of the happiest days of Dershowitz's life, because Trump is his personal hero. Yeah, Trump is my personal hero. So here's the next letter. Dersh, Trump backstabber. So one of my writers says I backstabbed Trump. The other says he's my personal hero. You're both wrong. Obviously, my personal hero is James Madison, who wrote the Constitution and the framers of the 14th Amendment. And so it was a happy day, not because of what impact it had on Donald Trump, but because of what impact it had on the Constitution of the United States, on civil liberties, and on the right of every American to vote. So don't ever confuse my principles with politics or with personalities. That's just not the way I operate. More tomorrow. See you then.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.